Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capital Report.
As Florida housing becomes ever less affordable, will developers respond to the growing need for less than premium dwellings?
They're going to be concerned about their bottom line, not necessarily the welfare of the local residents, which is the priority of the local government.
Also tonight, political insiders spoke about government spending in front of a room of fellow political insiders at Florida Tax Watch's annual State of the Taxpayer dinner.
Tonight we were served up a plateful of politics and insight from legislators and individuals that really care about Florida's taxpayers.
We'll also get an update on the state's coronavirus testing strategy and hear about the knockdown, drag-out fight in Tallahassee over the critical matter of the state's official dessert. It's day three of the 60-day Florida lawmaking session. I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capital Report. Housing and rental prices continue to soar in Florida, and wages are struggling to keep up. There are fewer and fewer options for affordable housing in the state. Groups like the Florida Housing Coalition are hoping lawmakers continue to put money designated for affordable housing into affordable housing. Yet, as Lynn Hatter reports, legislative efforts around the issue are a mixed bag.
Jamie Ross heads the Florida Housing Coalition. It advocates for available and quality affordable housing in the state. Ross is hoping state lawmakers do a repeat and put all the money that's in the Sadowski Affordable Housing Trust Fund back into affordable housing. Last year marked the first time in a decade that the money generated from home sales did not get swept into other priorities.
The number one thing that the legislature can do is keep the promise that it made last legislative session to use all the Sadowski State and Local Housing Trust Fund monies for housing.
This year, there's about $355 million in the trust. Florida lawmakers are also considering varying proposals that can encourage developers to build more affordable housing. One Senate plan builds on a 2020 law that lets developers build on land they previously couldn't. The proposal allows mixed-use developments to be built on property zoned residential, commercial, or industrial. It's progress, says Ross, but the bill isn't quite ideal.
It would be a better bill if it were to define affordable housing, which it could in terms of citing 420.004, the statutory definition for affordable housing, and also provided a minimum percentage of affordable housing that would be needed in order to put in a mixed-use development. For example, 50% of the development could be for affordable housing.
The bill also bans the use of money specifically designated for such projects from being used on the kind of projects the plan is trying to encourage. Ross calls the ban on the sale program befuddling.
I would assume good intentions by the sponsors of the bill. I don't understand why there would be a prohibition on using the sale program, since the sale program is a great program for producing affordable housing.
Sale provides government-backed grants to developers to encourage them to build affordable housing units. The Housing Coalition is also encouraging local governments to put more of their federal stimulus money into affordable housing projects. The average income of a Floridian, according to MIT, is about $31,000 a year. The average price of an apartment ranges from a low of $750 for a two-bedroom in Washington County to more than $1,700 in Monroe. A common rule of thumb is that people shouldn't spend more than 30% of their monthly income on rent or mortgage. Last month, the St. Petersburg City Council floated the idea of declaring a housing state of emergency and freeze rents for a year. The idea is still under consideration, but it could become moot if a planned super preemption bill gets approval from lawmakers. The measure was recently before the Senate's Community Affairs Committee, where Florida Rising lobbyist Letitia Harmon said it could kill efforts like St. Pete's.
What if a large corporation feels that affordable housing will encroach on their profits? They can sue the local government, who is only trying to do what was right and lawful for their community. We do know that much of the real estate in Florida, for example, is owned by overseas companies who may have vacation properties, beachfront properties here. They're going to be concerned about their bottom line, not necessarily the welfare of the local residents, which is the priority of the local government.
The preemption bill would let businesses and individuals sue to block ordinances if those ordinances cause businesses to lose 15% or more in revenue. There's also another plan in the works, one by Republican Representative Scott Plakin of Longwood. It could stymie a key affordable housing funding program known as SHIP. That program provides grants to local governments, who in turn help fund down payment and closing cost help for low and moderate income families. SHIP also helps support emergency repairs and property rehabilitations. Plakin's bill removes cities and counties from the process and consolidates it within the government-run Florida Housing Finance Corporation. Ross, along with the Housing Coalition, is watching developments closely. It's just the start of the annual 60-day lawmaking session, and the form many of the proposals appear in now likely won't stay that way. I'm Len Hatter.
A committee of the Florida Senate voted this week to advance a bill that would limit the liability of construction companies for defects on properties they once built. The bill would require homeowners to sue construction companies for latent defects in their home within 5 years of being built. That's down from the current 10 years in most cases. Martin Langesfeld lost his sister Nicole in last year's condo collapse in Surfside.
We need to realize that someone who purchased their dream home did absolutely nothing wrong but work hard for it. After such a horrific tragedy, we expect proposed bills to do the exact opposite of Senate Bill 736. Instead of dropping accountability from 10 years, why don't we instead work together and raise accountability so it doesn't occur again? The only ones benefiting from this bill are developers and insurance companies.
Analysis suspect latent construction defects played a major role in the Surfside condo collapse, but a federal investigation into the collapse is ongoing. The bill passed through the committee on a party line vote, with all Democrats voting against it. Florida lawmakers are tasked every legislative session with passing a budget for the next fiscal year. And for the last nearly four decades, the nonprofit, nonpartisan watchdog organization, Florida Tax Watch, has been working to make sure those dollars are spent responsibly. As Valerie Crowder reports, the organization and its supporters laid out this year's budget priorities at the think tank's annual State of the Taxpayer Dinner.
About 180 political insiders gathered for dinner at the A.C. Marriott Hotel in Cascades Park, where they listened to state lawmakers and cabinet members talk about the state of government spending. Industry group representatives, political party leaders, former lawmakers, and advocacy group members were in attendance. Florida Tax Watch Executive Vice President Tony Carvajal says the dinner was dedicated to everyone who calls the Sunshine State home.
Tonight we were served up a plateful of politics and insight from legislators and individuals that really care about Florida's taxpayer. This was a convening where, folks that are involved in the daily process came to hear about the people that they're serving. Oftentimes we call them Floridians. Today we're calling them taxpayers as a reminder of the importance that they play in the state.
Florida Tax Watch Chairman and former U.S. Senator George Lameau says the nonpartisan government watchdog group has two priorities this session. One is making sure the state's corporate income tax rate doesn't increase, and the second is making sure billions of dollars in federal aid are spent responsibly. And for Lameau's group, that means not spending money on small local projects.
It means a transformative amount of money spent to do things like broadband or building roads or fixing an airport, or doing things that are going to improve the quality of life for all Floridians, the project should be big enough that 5 years from now, people would say, oh yeah, that's what they spent the money on.
For infrastructure, the state is expected to get about $13 billion from the federal government as part of the Biden administration's Investment in Infrastructure and Jobs Act. A chunk of that money is expected to help fund broadband, an investment that has the support of both Democrats and Republicans. Speaking at the dinner, Republican Senator Jason Broder says that's one area he'd like to see a massive investment. Broder says it's needed especially in rural counties, where there's a demand for telemedicine, but residents lack access to high-speed internet.
It's a one-time expense, and it's going to allow those folks who are most vulnerable, those folks who are probably not having access to things. We have entire counties in Florida where we don't have a psychiatrist that accepts Medicaid. Entire counties. And so we've got very vulnerable populations experiencing huge mental health issues that have no access to anything.
Another pot of federal money lawmakers will figure out how to spend over the coming weeks is earmarked for education. The state has gotten about $15 billion to help reopen schools safely during the COVID-19 pandemic. Republican Representative Randy Fine is the chairman of the K-12 Subcommittee on Appropriations. To him, it's money the state doesn't really need but must spend. He says so far the state has not allocated about $12 billion of that total.
See, when the federal government borrows money and gives it to us for stuff we don't need, what are we going to do with it all? Now, we're trying. We're trying to backfill. Where can we backfill? Where can we do things? Where can we do that?
Not everyone speaking at the dinner criticized the massive investment in federal relief dollars. State Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried, who's also a Democratic candidate for governor, praised the Biden administration for investing more money in helping families and the state economy recover.
While we're incredibly fortunate to have an abundant resources from the federal government, ensuring that those resources are distributed fairly, equitably, and in the best way possible to help our families keep working and benefit Florida taxpayers will be one of our state's biggest challenges this year.
Every year, lawmakers must pass a budget before the regular legislative session adjourns. This year, they have until mid-March to come up with a spending plan that includes billions in federal aid. I'm Valerie Crowder.
Supporters of recreational marijuana gathered at the state capitol today. They were asking legislative leaders to hold hearings on bills that would legalize cannabis use for all adults in Florida. In part, bills filed in the House and Senate would open Florida's marijuana market, allowing all people 21 and older to grow, use, and possess some cannabis, while decriminalizing many pot-related offenses. Under current law, only medical marijuana usage is allowed in Florida by people with certain health conditions. During a Capitol news conference, Democratic House bill sponsor Yvonne Hinson asked Republican leadership to hear her proposal.
A bill legalizing marijuana has never been heard in the Florida House. That needs to change this year. States are legalizing cannabis all over the nation, and Florida is falling behind. We can't keep tabling these bills. Let's have the debate.
But chances of the bill's passage seem remote. Earlier this week, GOP House Speaker Chris Sprouse said he's opposed to recreational marijuana usage in the state. Still to come on Capitol Report. While some lawmakers say they'd like to see more money for coronavirus testing in the coming fiscal year, the state's Surgeon General says he doesn't see the need for so much focus on testing.
While it may seem that what is happening currently from a public health perspective nationally is the norm, it's in fact abnormal.
And controversy erupts at the Florida Capitol over the urgent issue of the state's official dessert?
Wondering if you're open to an amendment about making it the state cake as opposed to the state dessert.
Representative McClure.
Feels a little bit like you're one to have your cake and eat it too.
Here's a story that's a follow-up to a point made during Governor Ron DeSantis' State of the State address, which he made on Tuesday of this week before a joint session of the Florida legislature. In one of the governor's priorities for this year's legislative session, two Republican lawmakers have filed a proposal that seeks to ratchet up immigration enforcement in the state. Senator Aaron Bean of Fernandina Beach and Representative John Snyder of Stewart, both Republicans, filed identical bills nearly a month after DeSantis announced similar proposals during a news conference in Jacksonville. DeSantis and Attorney General Ashley Moody have criticized Biden administration border policies for months, and the bills came as lawmakers prepared to start the annual legislative session. DeSantis, Moody, and dozens of lawmakers, of course, are preparing for elections this fall. The proposal would expand a 2019 law that bans so-called sanctuary cities in Florida and would crack down on transportation companies that bring undocumented immigrants into the state. The proposal would bar the state and local governments from contracting with such companies if the carrier is willfully providing any service in furtherance of transporting an unauthorized alien into the state of Florida, knowing that the unauthorized alien entered into or remains in the United States in violation of the law. Coronavirus testing is proving to be a sticking point as lawmakers consider how to allocate funds for the upcoming fiscal year's health budget. Regan McCarthy says during a recent meeting, Democrats pushed to ensure testing money would be included in the plan.
During a recent meeting of the Senate committee tasked with hammering out the chamber's health care spending plan, Chair Aaron Bean reminded members to keep their questions and comments focused on the dollars and cents.
We're still talking about money. I know we want to talk about policy, but money. Okay. Money is what we're focused on today. So, Senator Jones, please continue and let's talk about money.
Miami Gardens Democratic Senator Chevron Jones says he wants to make sure next year's budget has enough money built in to support pandemic response efforts, including contact tracing, providing vaccines, and testing.
Knowing that we see the strain on cities when it comes to testing, you said this is a part of the activities because I asked the original question as it pertains to funding, so I'm still on the budget. What is the department doing when it comes to testing to alleviate the strain on cities financially, to alleviate the lines that we see in my district, the lines that we've seen across the state of Florida, to combat what we see currently right now for Floridians who want to be tested?
Jones asked his questions to Florida Surgeon General Joseph Latipo, who heads the State Department of Health. Latipo has recently said during press conferences with Governor Ron DeSantis, he thinks people have become too reliant on testing. And Governor Ron DeSantis recently asked Latipo's agency to put out new guidance for who he thinks should get tested. During the meeting, Latipo explained widespread testing for respiratory viruses is a new idea.
From a public health perspective, historically, testing for respiratory viruses that are spreading in the community has been limited to individuals who are symptomatic. So while it may seem that what is happening currently from a public health perspective nationally is the norm, it's in fact abnormal. So historically, focus on testing in respiratory viruses that are spreading in the community has been among people who are symptomatic.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends anyone with COVID-19 symptoms get tested. And the agency says anyone who has recently come in contact with someone who tested positive for COVID-19 should get tested as well. The CDC also suggests using a self-test before participating in indoor activities with people from outside your household. Latipo says he thinks decisions about getting tested should be left to each individual and their doctor.
It's important to recognize the distinction between public health measures and individual decision making. Our guidance in the Department of Health doesn't limit people from making decisions that best fit their health needs and health preferences. So we don't, for example, limit testing. In fact, we encourage people to consult with their physicians to make determinations about the best healthcare decisions for them.
Latipo says funds for coronavirus testing are included in the proposed budget request submitted by his department and Governor Ron DeSantis. The request also includes money to continue contact tracing, vaccines, and coronavirus education. I'm Regan McCarthy.
National Nurses United is calling on hospitals to boost staffing levels. WMFE's Matthew Petty reports members of the Union for Registered Nurses protested outside hospitals in 12 states today, including Florida.
Outside Osceola Regional Medical Center in Kissimmee, about 20 nurses waved signs that read "Staff up for safe care." Chris Setzer works in the cardiac intensive care unit. She used to spend about 9 hours out of her 12-hour shift with her patients.
But with tripling now, I'm lucky if I see them 3 hours a day. So the remaining 9 hours, who is watching your ICU loved one? It's not the nursing staff, because we're just not available.
Tripling, says Setzer, is when ICU nurses are asked to take care of not two, but three or sometimes four patients. She says a lot of nurses have left since the start of the pandemic. June Brown, who works in the COVID ICU, says it's demoralizing, but she has no plans to leave the job.
The next patient could be my mom. The next patient could be my husband. I watched my neighbor die. I coded him. I don't want to see that again.
Through tears, Brown says her neighbor, who is in his 80s, was admitted to hospital with COVID pneumonia last spring. The union says a recent nationwide survey of its members found 68% of them had considered quitting. They want hospitals to hire more permanent staff nurses, consider a wider range of educational qualifications, and improve cross-training of existing staff. I'm Matthew Petty in Orlando.
In a statement, Osceola Regional Medical Center CEO David Shimp said he was proud of how the hospital staff has worked together during the pandemic, and the NNU protest would not distract from the focus of caring for the community. Car stunts like donuts, drifting, and burnouts could become illegal in Florida under a bill taken up by the Senate Transportation Committee this week.
You'll be amazed at how powerful and instant the messaging is to kids, especially if we pass something like this, word gets out in the street and behavior stops.
Miami Democratic Senator Jason Pizzo says these events happen almost nightly around Florida and have caused numerous deaths and injuries. Miami Gardens Democratic Senator Chevron Jones says he's seen the same thing at intersections in town and in neighborhoods.
There are tire marks in the middle of the street where kids play and also where neighbors walk. It's extremely dangerous. My brother has expressed how late at night, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, all you hear is a car in the middle of the street that's going round and round with people outside. And these are in neighborhoods where people actually reside.
The committee unanimously approved the bill to make it a first-degree misdemeanor to drive, be a passenger, or be a spectator at a so-called street takeover. You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, Florida already has an official state pie. In case you're wondering, it's key lime. Now there's a move in the legislature to designate strawberry shortcake as the official state dessert. Gina Jordan tells us the legislation is eliciting a lot of laughs and growling stomachs, while also supporting Florida's strawberry farmers.
This is the sweetest bill you're going to hear all session.
Gosh.
I'm not trying to take the key limelight away from the state pie.
It's true. Plant City Republican Representative Lawrence McClure wants key lime to keep its title as the state pie. He's proposing that strawberry shortcake be designated as the official state dessert. And that title is not without controversy, as noted by Vero Beach Republican Representative Aaron Grawl.
As a fan of key lime pie,
as am I.
I mean, I have a little concern that this would prioritize it as a state dessert. And so willing to still consider the importance of it and loving strawberry shortcake, wondering if you're open to an amendment about making it the state cake as opposed to the state dessert.
Representative McClure.
Feels a little bit like you're wanting to have your cake and eat it too.
McClure said he would consider making the change. Tallahassee Democratic Representative Allison Tant was hoping to help research the need for this legislation.
Why don't we have anything to sample today to decide if this is a good bill? And are we going to have it in the members' lounge for dessert? Because if not, I think you better have it ready for the floor vote.
North Fort Myers Republican Representative Spencer Roach doesn't need samples. He's all in.
You may remember that we observed a very important ceremonial award and declaration on our last day of session last year, and I had the distinguished honor of getting the biggest gainer award, meaning that I ate plenty of pie and cake during the last session, and just happy as the reigning champion of the biggest gainer award go on record supporting this bill.
All joking aside, McClure's district includes Plant City, a town in central Florida that is known as the world's winter strawberry capital.
The state of Florida, the strawberry is our economic driver, almost $1 billion economic impact. We're in great competition with Mexico. We've had all sorts of disease, labor, and international trade issues. And so this bill is really meant to bring some fun attention to what drives our economy back home.
Plant City is home to 10,000 acres of strawberry fields, which produce 75% of America's winter strawberry crop. Sunrise Democratic Representative Dan Daly says he recently met with some of those growers and took a tour of their farm.
And it's really amazing and eye-opening, the industry itself and the impact that it has to Florida, right? I think we always think of tourism as the first industry in Florida, as has been the case for many, many years, but ag is the second largest industry, and sometimes it gets overlooked.
Florida's strawberry industry is the second largest producing region in the United States, but it's got competition, as McClure told the committee.
This is what we do back home, and we have been in the fight of our lives, specifically with Mexico, and to be able to just have a few minutes to laugh about our industry and how our folks make a living is truly meaningful.
McClure's bill received bipartisan support in the House Public Integrity and Elections Committee. By the way, the nickname for that committee is PIE. I'm Gina Jordan.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Valerie Crowder, Gina Jordan, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Brett Rutherford. Technical assistance for Capitol Report comes from Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Join us again each weeknight throughout the 2022 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com.